think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob,
Mike Orr. My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 170 of Low Limit Football on this 24th of July, 2017. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and back for another great week of summer football in the crazy season. Tonight, we are going to explore in MLS when your money is absolutely no good anymore. We're going to look at the Gold Cup final and find out which favorite misplaced their invitation from CONCACAF to the party. And when setting a transfer record is not good enough, what you do is you beat your own transfer record. We're going to go and talk about that in a little while. We're going to discuss Neymar. Yes, we're still going to discuss Neymar. And look at his potential goodbye gift to Barcelona at the International Champions Cup over the weekend. We'll look at all the latest transfer news and information with our special guest from DiMarzio. Zeke Tell will be joining us in a little bit. Señor Rojas, what is going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing well, Joe. You had a fun weekend. I did as well, but I'm sure you had a better weekend than I am watching maybe the last games of a future world star player.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, the last of his in Blaugrana, that's for sure. And that kind of what I hinted to gave the faithful at Barcelona quite the going away show with two goals against Juventus and the 2-1 victory at MetLife Stadium in New York City on Saturday night. I was 14 rows from those goals. And the second goal, I can tell you, was absolute magic, the way he dribbled through everybody. It was just something else to see. Disappointing for me as a Juve fan, but still magic to watch my favorite team for the first time. I'd actually never seen Juventus play live. And so that was a little bit of, I guess, of a bucket list kind of thing. But to see them, to see Gigi Buffon still play, to see Messi and Neymar play, and although Suarez was at the other end of the pitch because he came out in the second half, to see Suarez play, to see some of those, you know, those players play like that, Higuain, Dybala, Cuadrado came on and gave quite the show as well. Alexandro played pretty well in the second half. Got to see the kid Betancourt, who came over from Boca Juniors, who I got to say, Rob, very, very impressive for a young kid. I think because I forget his age, but he's a recent signing. I think it might be 21. It might be 21, Rob. Maybe
20.
20. Yeah, I was going to say he was completely impressive for me. That kid's going to be a stud. So I really enjoyed watching him play. Got to see Matia DiCilio play for the first time in the black and white stripes. There was so much.
Who was your? I'll ask you this because I think I know who your favorite player was for Barcelona that day. But for Juventus, who was the one that impressed you the most?
Wow.
Just one.
I'm trying to decide one. I mean, I had a couple that gave great performances. God, it's tough to select just one. I thought Marchisio played pretty well. I thought Chiellini in the second half just put Luis Suarez back in his back pocket like he's had him for years. Dybala. Probably Dybala.
Dybala?
Yeah, just, you know, I mean, you didn't get enough Dybala because he came on in the second half. But to watch him dance a couple of times in the midfield and meg a couple guys and just go through people, wow. Just wow. The kid is going to be so impressive. It's crazy. And Juve, I know a lot of the Juventus fans were really getting up about how Juve sell the good players, we're going to miss Bonucci, blah, 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 that kind of stuff. I hope they don't do that with Dybala. Because he was phenomenal. He was absolutely phenomenal. So, yeah, I guess Dybala, obviously Neymar was the stud of the show, on the Barca side. He was man of the match, obviously the two goals. But it was a lot of fun. So Rob, I gave you that little trivia question, or not trivia question, but a little factoid, another claim to fame to me. In this particular month, I was, in attendance for the most attended game, or the highest attendance at a soccer match in the state of Tennessee's history, which was the USA-Panama match and the Gold Cup match a few weeks ago. And on Saturday, I was in attendance for the highest attendance ever for a soccer match in New Jersey state history, with this weekend's matchup exceeding or eclipsing the Copa America Centenario final from last year. So... So I was a part of two big soccer crowds, I guess two historic soccer crowds, which is kind of fun. And who knows, maybe they sell a few tickets, and I'll be there again this weekend if we manage to get to the Juve Roma matchup in Foxborough on Sunday night.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's get to it. Let's get to work. I know our special guest Zeke Tell is going to be joining us in about I've lost my clock here about 15 minutes or so. I know we've got a couple of things to get through before we have them on, so let's start off with the trivia, and Rob, it's your turn, man, so fire away.
All right. Today's signing of Benjamin Mendy became the second most expensive signing that Pep Guardiola has ever made. Can you name the other four that he's made in his managerial career? Bonus points if you can tell me the club that he came from and the club that he obviously joined. So you have three clubs to work with here: Barcelona, Bayern, and Manchester City. And can you name the other four?
Okay. So, give me the question again. So you want the four highest transfers that he's brought in?
Yes. Well, okay. you just mentioned Benjamin Mendy's on that top five.
As number two, you said.
As number two. Can you name the other four?
The other four players. Okay. So one of them is very easy because... Mendy broke a transfer record that they set actually earlier this month that I can definitely say with confidence. I'm going to have to think about, I think a bunch of them are probably in this particular transfer window that I just thought of. How many players do I need to give you? Four?
Four. Four.
Okay. So I've got three written down. Wait a minute. Hang on a second. I have four players written down, but I think one of them is before or after Pep left. So after Pep left Barca. So that's where I'm going to sit at the moment. So let's all right. So we'll give you that trivia question at the end of the show. Let's get into it with our opening thoughts topic tonight, and obviously. You know, Rob, you and I have been lucky. We've done a couple of This Week in Footballs. If you haven't had the chance to check them out, they are on our iTunes feed. They are also up on our website, and they strictly were shows, which we both enjoy doing. So we're not going to dip too far into transfer window stuff tonight, but we wanted to look at the leagues that we normally cover with the transfer window so far and just giving a few thoughts on each particular league. So I'm going to turn it over to you for your opening thoughts on what's happened in La Liga in this transfer window, kind of the, you know, just any thoughts that you may have.
Yeah, I mean, it's not been too much of noise happening in Spain, obviously, at this moment, you know. Clubs in La Liga have completed 176 deals in this transfer window that are worth 534.5 £1.9 million. The highest that a player has bought in La Liga, that a La Liga team has bought, was Vitolo going to Sevilla, Atletico Madrid, which obviously will be going on loan to Las Palmas. Obviously, the transfer of Nelson Semedo from Benfica to Barcelona at £26.5 million is the biggest transfer for them. And for Real Madrid, not counting Vinicius Jr., who will be joining the club from Flamengo to Real Madrid in 2018 for a deal worth £39.6 million, the transfer of Theo Hernandez from Atletico Madrid to rivals Real Madrid of £22.8 million is the biggest transfer for the current European champions. Above all, I don't think we're seeing too much noise being made from your Barcelonas, your Real Madrid, your Atletico Madrid. Obviously they can't sign anyone because of that transfer, and your Sevillas, your Valencias, and so on and so forth. So I think whatever's going to happen with this whole Neymar situation, you're going to see a lot of, if it does go through, I think you're going to see a lot of noise happening at month's end, in August. But above all, it's been mainly just La Liga teams selling their players to teams in the Premier League, and also to the Bundesliga, to Serie A as well, mentioning, you know, players like Alvaro Morata, like Danilo, Mateo Mustacho, James Rodriguez. Obviously, that's a loan. But above all, it hasn't been too much noise comparing it to an England or to an Italy, Joe.
Sure, absolutely. It's but like you said, I think if that Neymar domino falls, I think you're going to see a lot of dominoes start falling after it. I think worldwide. I think that you'll start to see Barca maybe become a little more active in the transfer window, especially with a huge influx of money that they would get for that particular transfer if it does come to fruition. So we'll have to see. I'm going to give you the quick rundown on France, on Ligue 1, where, you know, Rob, really what we're seeing is a weakening of two of the top teams in the league. Last year's champion, Monaco, and I believe Europa League qualifiers, Lyon. The most expensive transfer that's happened so far out of France just happened within the past 24 hours. That's Benjamin Mendy going to Manchester City from Monaco for £52 million. But Manchester City has been sending a lot of money Monaco's way, adding the £43.6 million move of Bernardo Silva to City as well. Monaco selling three huge pieces in this transfer window: Mendy, Bernardo Silva, and Timo Bakayoko, who went over to Chelsea for almost £40 million. Lyon also weakened an attack, really. So I'm going to interesting to see what happens with Lyon moving forward. Sending Alexandre Lacazette to Arsenal for £46 million, and Corentin Tolisso, the young midfielder, to Bayern Munich for £36.4 million. Now, Monaco has spent some of that money back again, bringing in Youri Tielemans from Anderlecht for £21.6 million, and Terence Kongolo from Feyenoord for £11 million. So they have put that money into use to bring in a couple of young players there. Don't see it happening so much for Lyon. And for me, up until, again, this Neymar point, Paris Saint-Germain been very, very quiet in this transfer window. Really the only addition is Jean-Kevin Augustin from RB Leipzig for £11 million. It's really the only move of consequence they've really made. One of the other things that I wanted to, and I just want to call up my information quickly here. One team that I'm surprised has been quiet despite qualifying for a European spot is Nice. They've really only brought in two players so far in this window: Adrien Tamize for $700,000 from Valenciennes, and Pierre-Lys Melou from Dijon for $1.8 million. Otherwise, they've only released or loaned out a couple of players, no one of real consequence. And I'm surprised a team that is going into Europe is going to be so quiet going into the European transfer, into the market. Overall, so far, 234 deals worth £503 million have been completed by the clubs in Ligue 1. And that number could grow significantly if Neymar comes to fruition. So how about England, Rob? I mean, England has never been shy to spend cash, right?
With only 252 deals already been made this summer transfer window, they have already surpassed £1 billion so far this season. And yeah, like I said, you and I have been in immense debate regarding Premier League clubs spending too much on other players. Boy, have they spent a lot of players, haven't they? Just some of the transfers that have been made that are just over, I guess. You know what? Yeah, I'll say it like this. The transfers that have only been – these are the transfers that are only over 30 million. Romelu Lukaku to Manchester United, Morata, Benjamin Mendy that happened today, Kyle Walker, Lacazette, Bernardo Silva, Bakayoko, Salah, Ederson, Lindelof. You know, it's never been better. I think this is one of the greatest transfer windows that the Premier League has had in a long time, or at least I can remember. So, yeah, I mean, with the significant advantage that they have with TV contracts, with the marketing that the Premier League has around the world, it comes with no surprise that these players are being bought by big bucks by these Premier League clubs.
Yeah, not only that, they're bringing them into England. Into the Premier League, or they're selling within the Premier League. I'm looking at the transfer list here. The most expensive player to leave England in this transfer window, Juan Cuadrado, £17.3 million to Juventus. That is literally, and I'm doing quick scan. He's got to be like 17th on this transfer list, and I'll count them quickly: Lukaku, Morata, Mendy, Walker, Lacazette, Bernardo Silva, Bakayoko, Salah, Ederson, Lindelof. Antonio Rudiger, Danilo, Michael Caine, Jordan Pickford, Davy Klaassen, Arnautovic, Nathan Ake, and then Juan Cuadrado. 18th, the 18th most expensive transfer. You finally saw a player moving out of England, which tells me they're keeping all that money. Well, they're keeping all that money in. They're not really looking to bring in money. They're looking to bring in players or move players. And again, it goes to the amount of wealth that's in that particular league right now. It's a ridiculous amount of money. So, and then like you'd said, over $1 billion already spent by the Premier League teams so far this transfer window. It's absolutely crazy. Not to say that there's sanity here, but let's go to the Serie A side. 194 deals so far have been completed by Serie A clubs. £678 million. I think I want to say that's second overall, Rob. Behind, I'm just going to check the German league quick, but I think it is. Yeah, it's ahead of Germany, and I think it's ahead of La Liga. Yeah. So Italy actually, you know, throwing around a little cash this year. Most expensive player moving out of Italy, Mohamed Salah, at like we said earlier, to Liverpool for almost £37 million. The biggest transfer aside from Salah, the biggest transfer in Italy actually happened today, where it was made official. It involved Juventus, but it was not Bonucci moving out. It was Bernardeschi moving in. Federico passed his physical, and was the transfer fee from Fiorentina to Juventus was £35.7 million. And having said that, you know Milan doesn't come in until third with Bonucci, but they've spent $35.2 million on Bonucci, $33.5 million on Andre Silva. So they've, you know, and we've talked about how much Milan has spent in this particular transfer window. It has been an absolute amazing amount of money. I'm just going to call up the factors here quickly. They are £135 million in the hole right now. Frank Kessie comes in, Musacchio from Villarreal for $15 million, Ricardo Rodriguez, Andre Silva, Fabio Borini, Hakan Çalhanoğlu, Andrea Conti, Antonio Donnarumma. That was kind of a move to help keep Gigi there. Lucas Biglia just moved in from Lazio, and of course the aforementioned Bonucci, and they are not done. We're going to talk to Zeke Tell about that in a couple of minutes, because there are still some rumors out there, even some very big names that might be going to Italy. Have the other teams done enough to challenge the six-time champion, though? I'm not sure, and I think that's a question that we both have for Zeke coming up in a few minutes. But good to see them spending a little money, 194 deals. And they're certainly not afraid to throw the cash around. So we'll have to see what that means for the Italian teams moving forward, especially in European competition. So last question in Europe, last league in Europe that we usually talk about is your honor, sir, with the German Bundesliga.
Yeah, and the German Bundesliga, it is the league that has spent the less amount, or at least they haven't spent the most. Out of all the five top leagues in Europe, they've only had 211 deals that have been completed, worth £475.6 million. The biggest transfer is Corlin Tolisso for £36.4 million. But above all, it's been also a bit quiet. I think the club that has made the most noise out of anyone is the champions, Bayern Munich. You know, they got players like Tolisso, they got players like James Rodriguez, and players like Süle and Arnold as well. But it's been quiet as well in Germany as well. It's been a lot of movement of players leaving Germany, heading abroad. You know, you just mentioned Çalhanoğlu. You mentioned players like trying to remember one player like Mendy Benatia, you know, another one like Ricardo Rodriguez. Even today, Chicharito leaving Bayer Leverkusen to go to West Ham. So yeah, it hasn't been too much noise happening in the Bundesliga, but definitely a lot of noise of players leaving the Bundesliga, going abroad.
I'm
going
to ask you a question now as an overall general question. Looking back at this transfer window across Europe, what team do you think has had the best transfer window and why? I know we have a question like that for Zeke tonight, but I'd like your take on it.
I mean, you can't go wrong with what Manchester City have been doing all summer long. I mean, they were able to get a lot of good additions to fit in the holes that, you know, they've been lacking for quite some time, especially in the defense. So you have to give credit to them. I think another team that, you know, haven't been obviously showing too much yet, because we haven't really seen much of them, is Milan. You know, they spend big time on a lot of transfers, and while they haven't been showing too much, I guess, yet, I mean, unless you take friendlies into consideration very seriously, that's another team. I mean, I think other teams besides them, you know, like Everton, you know, teams like even Bayern Munich as well. Even Bayern Munich as well. I think they had a good transfer window as well. But, I mean, it's mainly most of the teams in the Premier League that have been spending well this summer. Not much from teams outside of it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Bayern's done very well. I think Juve's had a decent window. I would have liked to have seen them done a little bit better. But they're not a bad window. Milan definitely by far one of the best windows out there. I do like that Arsenal brought on Lacazette, where, you know, it was definitely an area of need. And they finally went out and did it instead of, you know, seeing people complain. I do agree. City spent a lot of money. I'm almost to the point where they may have overspent on, you know, in terms of, you know, what they've brought in, bringing in Kyle Walker and then bringing in Danilo right behind him for another 20 something million, 26 million might not have been the best move, but it wasn't a bad move. But we've seen some teams spend pretty well. You know, Chelsea even has been, you know, reasonably smart. They bring in a guy like Bakayoko. They know they're going to have a problem with Diego Costa, so they bring in Morata for $58 million. You know, Rudiger is going to help in that defense, especially you don't have the captain John Terry there anymore. So that's something that they needed to address. They needed to bring in some cover there. So I think a guy like Rudiger, German national team guy, I think is a smart move. So Chelsea, I think, has done, you know, fairly well. And they haven't really broken the bank. They're 60 million to the bad here, 59.5 million at the moment. I don't think that's horrible for a team to spend. You know, you look at City spent 178 million. They're actually 178 million to the bad. So you have to look almost 179 million. You know, but they've brought in fantastic pieces. Like we said, Benjamin Mendy was huge. Bernardo Silva, they did that early. That was a great move for them, I think. They've done a lot of good stuff there. It's just it's been an expensive run for them. I saw a tweet today from Tarek Khatib, who covers Juventus, and he talked about City's back line and how much it costs. It's costing City's back line right now, they're starting four and their goalkeeper, 243 million euros. And that breaks down to 39 million for Ederson, 56 for Walker, 36 for Nicolas Otamendi, who they brought in previously, John Stones, 54 million. And then the most expensive piece in the puzzle is Mendy, that they brought in for 58 million earlier today. So it's a pricey back line. And for me, I don't know that that is, money well spent. I think that's maybe a little overpriced, but that's the way the market's gone these days. And that's what it's taken to get those players. So hopefully it pans out. You and I were talking quickly about City's moves. And again, like we've said, we think they've made some pretty good moves here. But in the end, if this goes south on City, a lot of it, if not all of it, is going to be hung on Pep Guardiola's head, right?
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
So just another last Manchester City number, and this one was tweeted by Bleacher Report. Since 2014, Manchester City has spent almost £300 million on just defenders and goalkeepers alone. Willie Caballero, £4.4 million. Claudio Bravo, £15.4 million. Rulli for $4 million, John Stones, as we mentioned before. So there's Eloquent Mangala for £32 million as well. So there's some huge numbers there. But we'll have to see how things pan out for these teams in the long run. You know, team like City, we could be talking about, oh my God, they spent too much. And then next thing you know, they go and they challenge for the Champions League and, you know, maybe even win it. So, you know, from that standpoint, it's money well spent, right? I mean, you know, so it's one thing to say that prices are inflated or not at this point, but if it translates into the, you know, winning these leagues and stuff like that, then it's a totally different story. So I'm going to dial up our guest Zeke Tell here now and see if we can get him connected, and we will we'll jump into it a little bit deeper here. If you just bear with me 1 second, we will we'll get him added to our conversation, right? So and I'm excited to have him. We were trying to have him on a couple weeks ago, but it didn't work out, so it's really nice that we're able to get him tonight, especially in the middle of the transfer window like this is going on right now. It's been absolutely crazy. So hopefully we'll get him connected here very quickly, and we'll get to talk a little more transfer stuff, right? I mean, that's the whole goal here. So I just want to make sure I have him connected. Zeke, do I have you?
Hey, yes. Hey, you have me.
Fantastic, man. Thanks for joining us tonight. How have you been?
Hey, good. It's great to be back on, and it's fun to be talking again with you guys about transfers.
Oh, we appreciate you taking the time. My first question to you, though, quickly is, and I should have probably reached out earlier, were you at the Juve-Barca game on the weekend?
I didn't go to the game. One of our colleagues on DiMazio went for the training match, and then I had plenty of friends who were there checking out the action from the stands on Saturday. And you know, the Neymar move certainly made the highlight reels. Juventus didn't really put on the best advertisement for themselves or for Serie A, but looked like a fun time in the Meadowlands.
Yeah, but you know, the second half for Juve was way better than the first for me. And like I was telling Rob earlier, I was impressed with Betancourt's play in the first half. I thought that kid really shined. But clearly the team that started the first half was not as good as the team that started the second half. I was a little concerned with the way Barzagli and Benatia played central defense there. Lichtsteiner looked awful to me as well. Neymar just basically ran circles around him for 45 minutes.
That was certainly a takeaway coming from the matches, is the team's got to put the pieces together for the season to start, but being a preseason match, certainly the minds of the players are on getting their fitness together, and certainly coming together as a team will come as they move closer to the start of the championship.
I've got to say, after the Lichtsteiner performance, that move for DeCilio looked better and better every minute, I got to tell you. So I'm glad they did make that move. Let's jump into it with Juventus in the transfer talks. My first question to you is, obviously, Juve finished up their deal for Federico Bernardeschi today. Is Juventus done, or is there still a chance they could bring in another name, especially with Nedved hinting earlier in the day that they could reopen negotiations for Patrick Schick? Also, you know, some of the fans have wanted to see maybe Steven Zonzi come over from Sevilla. So are there any other rumor, are there any other moves possibly planned by Juve going forward?
I think if you ask people, Juventus is still on the market for midfielders, so Inzaghi could fit that bill. Emre Can and Matic from Chelsea are two names that Di Marzio linked to Juventus. And so as we continue into the summer, they could be adding a midfielder. I think as far as Schick, DiMarzio reported this evening that it's looking that it's a choice between either staying at Sampdoria for another season, something that Schick's open to. Inter is starting to join the fray here, and PSG is another option for Schick. As far as whether he goes back to Juventus, as Nedved, you're right, said anything can happen. It's looking like one of those three options for Schick. But for Juventus, I think they're still targeting a midfield player to bring in this summer.
Okay. I want to turn the questioning over now to the ongoing Neymar saga, because obviously it's still on everybody's mind. It would be an enormous move if it ever happened. So my question has always been, in terms of this move, from the minute we heard it, how does PSG plan to balance the books if they acquire Neymar? And could Verratti be part of a package going back to Barcelona that would help to balance that number?
I mean, the numbers you're talking about are so high. I don't think anyone's really has a blueprint for how this move works. I mean, you're talking about more money than any player has ever been transferred for in history. So there's a lot of moving pieces here. Obviously, the finances can get incredibly complicated in deals like this when it comes to ownership and players' rights, and then, like you said, the clubs have to provide reporting to their municipalities and to their shareholders. So, there's a lot of smart people, a lot of people involved in these deals, from agents, attorneys, club officials, auditors. So, it's going to be up to them to sort of figure out how this deal works. But, being such a large sum being talked about for Neymar, you can be sure that they're going to scrutinize everything really, really closely with this potential deal.
No doubt.
Zeke, I'm just going to jump in and thank you again for coming on the show. It's been a long time. I guess looking at the situation with Neymar, what's the latest that you got from DiMarzio, and also just your opinion personally, if this move does indeed go through, what are your opinions on this regarding Neymar's career as a smart choice, or maybe even as a dumb choice?
Yeah, I think it seems like it's a move that Neymar's open to, and what I really put it down to is, how PSG sells this to him, and obviously PSG is a really well-funded club. They had success domestically. They've competed in the Champions League. They're not quite at the level where they have competed yet for a final, but as far as making Neymar a centerpiece of a Champions League final contending team, that's probably what the attraction is going to be for him, to be that star player in a European capital, and the adoring fans that come with that. So if PSG can convince Neymar, and it seems that he's not necessarily tied to Barcelona, as his one true home, I think that it would be interesting to see, if that's a move that he would agree to.
Do you think that this just opens the door for Verratti to go as his replacement at Barcelona, or do you think that there's a real possibility that both could work together at PSG?
Well, I don't know. DiMarzio hasn't reported on Verratti leaving PSG yet. Personally, I think that there will definitely be some other pieces that fall here. If the Neymar deal goes through, and wouldn't shock me at all to see Verratti leaving. Verratti's agent has said that the deal to Italy he sees being particularly complicated, given that there are very few teams in Italy who can afford a player like Verratti. So to see him go to a Barcelona or end up in the Premier League, personally, I think that there's a chance that happens to him.
Right, definitely. I'm just sticking, I guess, now to Serie A. We look at Juventus' transfer window, and they had a spectacular transfer window, to say the least. They were able to get a lot of good players, either on loan or by transfers. Do you think that they filled in those pieces that you think that were lacking in that Champions League final last year, or do you feel that there's still something that Juventus need in order to really contend for a Champions League if they aren't already?
I don't think you could say, you know, you look at the players that Juventus added, certainly, and you look at the players who they let leave, and Bonucci is a tremendous impact player, arguably the best defender in the league. And to look at them being able to sell a player like him and still be considered not only the best team in Italy, but, you know, still among the contenders for the Champions League final. You know, they brought in players on offense who can, you know, shift a little bit of the sort of the style of play that Allegri is going to use. But, you know, but he's a smart manager. He understands tactically, you know, how to be a successful coach, both in the league and in the Champions League. No question that Juventus adapts, uses the pieces that they have at their disposal and puts forward a really strong team who can certainly compete for every competition next year.
Of course, and they definitely have the potential to do that, looking into this exciting season we have next year. And just my last question, thank you again for taking the time off. We've had a crazy transfer window so far from a lot of teams across Europe, especially in England and especially in Italy. You know, we just talked about this with Joe in our opening thoughts. Who do you think had the best transfer window so far out of all the big teams in Europe?
Yeah, I'll answer, following the Italian league most closely, and I think you might have been alluding to Milan as one of the crazy performers. I think that not only the names of the players they brought in, and certainly they landed players who were immediate starters, Kessie, and others who were sought by teams in the Premier League. But you look at the speed that they did it in, and considering that their management, Fassone and Mirabelli, first transfer window that they've had at the club, they really seem to have, know their business and work really well together. And just having, been able to sort of storm the market and sign, I think, 7 or 8 players before the first 3 weeks of the market had passed. I think that was a stunning thing for a lot of people to see, and I think something that people who follow the Italian league closely, it really was a sign that we're going to see a stronger Milan, hopefully not just next season, but in future seasons to come, as they continue to expand the capabilities of the team with the new ownership.
No, definitely. I agree. I think what we're seeing with this new project that both Milan clubs are doing, it's something that we definitely have to keep an eye out for in the future.
So I'm just going to jump back in here real quick, Zeke, because I want to stick with Milan a little bit. Obviously, I mentioned in our opening thoughts that I thought they've had one of the best transfer windows. They've really added a lot of key players and done a lot of real nice things, especially with Bonucci coming on to really solidify that defense. And they've been aggressive all summer long. So my question to you is, who is next as far as you can see? I know we've heard rumors of Renato Sanchez. We've heard rumors of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and Andrea Belotti. Who's next for you, or who's next do you see going to Milan, or do you see Milan kind of closing up shop saying we're good with what we've got?
Yeah, I think there's some sexy names on the market, Belotti and Aubameyang. Personally, I think the way the tides are going towards just their current clubs asking too high a price that Milan would be willing to pay for Aubameyang. The cost is over 100 million. For Belotti, that's his exit clause, but it's been reported by Di Marzio that Torino will take 80 million plus a combination of Niang and maybe another player from Milan. That's asking a lot. Personally, my feeling is that they will add another player. Kalinic from Fiorentina is a striker who Montella knows well, would work with his system. I think is affordable, definitely compared to the other two players. And even though he's not the sexy name that they are, I think Milan is definitely going to add another striker before the market closes. If for some reason the asking price on one of those two premier strikers drops, they could certainly join. And I guess you have the wild card of Diego Costa joining the team until January when it looks like he'd move to Atletico. Mm-hmm. I think Milan, you will definitely see them adding a striker still in this transfer market.
Right. Well, if it's not Belotti, do you see Belotti moving in this window? I know that the club has actually come out and said that the next contract Belotti's going to sign is actually with us. So is there a chance he still moves in this window, or you think it's going to take maybe the winter or even maybe next summer during the World Cup?
Well, there was a crazy saga last week at the Torino training retreat where at 1 a.m, Belotti was meeting with the president of Torino, Urbano Cairo. Immediately after that meeting ended, it lasted about 45 minutes. Cairo was meeting with his sporting director. So there was certainly a lot of smoke there. So far, we haven't seen the fire. So as far as Belotti moving teams, the real news that came out of that was that he's leaning towards signing an extension, like you mentioned, with Torino. So if there's something there, we it hasn't come out yet. But it does look like that Belotti is going to stay with his current club in Torino for next year.
All right. Last question I want to ask you about Serie A teams, and that's Inter Milan. Obviously, one of the things that happened over the season last year was that both Milan clubs were sold to Chinese investment groups. Obviously, the AC Milan group has not been shy with the checkbook, and we've seen it with them throwing money around like it was candy. Been a little more conservative on the other side of the stands at the San Siro, with Inter not spending quite nearly as much as their Milan counterparts. Do you see them attempting to make some type of big splash here coming up in the window? Because I can't imagine the faithful at Inter are happy with them only spending a net sum of $7 million in this window so far.
Well, you have two big names who are reported, linked to other clubs for Inter selling. That's Perisic and Kondreva. So if they sell them for what's being reported a combined 65 or 70 million euros, I think you could definitely see Inter bring someone, reinvest that money in the team and bring a big player in. I think what you look at what they added this year, they really added some role players. They brought in Borja Valero and Skriniar from Sampdoria. The amount of money they spent the year prior, and I think they're clearly trying to make it work with the team they have. They replaced the manager. They brought in Spalletti from Roma, who's a great coach, and I think that with the team Inter has, they and the new leadership, that they can probably perform a little bit better on a whole than they did during the last Serie A campaign, where the team really looked like for long stretches that they were disinterested and really not performing to the level that they should, given the quality of players and the investments that the new owners made in the club. So for Inter, you could see another move. They're really looking to get Martial from Manchester United. They inquired about a loan. It doesn't look like Manchester United is open to letting him leave without Inter selling Perisic back to them. So Inter could still have some more activity, but I think that you're going to see a team who, regardless of the moves they made, is going to improve next season just on the pure win and loss basis.
Yeah, I think for me, you brought up something pretty interesting, is the team seemed flat for stretches of the season last year. A guy like Spalletti just doesn't let that happen. So we could look back on this transfer window and say the best move that Inter made was actually on the touchline and not actually on the pitch.
Yeah, I think that's really right. And I think, people who followed Spalletti, definitely, think highly of him. And I see him, doing just like you said at Inter and really keeping their levels up and keeping the players motivated.
Yeah.
He can do that.
Oh, absolutely. For some reason, my brother thought that that Roma was crazy to let him go and to run off to Inter. But they actually did pretty well with Eusebio Di Francisco coming in as the replacement, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I think Inter is going to be another interesting team to watch, no question. Di Francesco played did well at Empoli, but he's at a much bigger club now, and he's only 47 years old. He's in charge of a big club like Roma, and it could be exciting times for Roma and their fans. I think this year.
Yeah, the guy actually looks in good enough shape that he could actually run out and play still, which is kind of amazing. So, Zeke, I want to thank you for taking some time out tonight and joining us, especially with the great talk about the transfer window. We'll have to see how all those moves pan out. I want to just bring up one other move here real quick. We talked about Bernardeschi to Juventus. That's a done deal. But Marko Arnautović from Stoke to West Ham. Now they brought in a second striker with adding Chicharito earlier in the week. The £20 million price tag. I think Chicharito was brought in for, I want to say, Rob, like $12 million, right? I didn't look it up. I can look it up quickly here. But your thoughts on them going out and adding a second striker after adding Chicharito earlier in the week? Actually, they don't disclose an amount for Chicharito, but I thought it was in the £12 million range.
More, so, 16.
It was 16. Okay, so. Arnautović comes in at 20. What are your thoughts on that just in general?
I think it's a good move. I think for West Ham, they could definitely contend for a European spot. You know, I think they have enough depth that they haven't had in a long time. You know, they added Joe Harding goal, so I think they're getting more quality players for Slaven Bilic. You know, they also added players like Paulo Zabaleta, you know, so you get experience as well. Mm-hmm. And obviously some really great players in Marko Arnautović and Javier Hernandez. So, yeah, good for West Ham. I think they had a good transfer window so far.
Yeah, I think so too. I know people were talking about them not building from within, but I think these moves are nice moves. I think adding a guy like Arnautović really gives them a striker that can score in this particular league. I know Slaven Bilic is really looking to strengthen this side, especially after the year they had last year. I am just looking. I know there's one person I wanted to talk about. I know they added Andre Ayew, previously. So they've got a decent midfield here as well, where they could, they could possibly challenge back in for those European positions. Will they? I don't know. It's probably going to be tough compared to all the other players that have been added to the other teams. But I think a coach like Bilic is certainly some quality. I think they do bear watching in this EPL season coming up. That's for sure. So, any other transfers, Rob, that I can't think? Oh, I do have one that has been rumored. There is apparently, I think at last read, there was an agreement in place. It involves an MLS team. I don't know if you heard about this one. You did hear about this one, right?
Well, I have one in mind as well, but go ahead.
Okay, the LA Galaxy looking to add the other half of the Dos Santos duo with Jonathan Dos Santos. Currently, they are working on a deal to bring Jonathan Dos Santos from Villarreal to play with his brother Gio for the LA Galaxy. That's one that's out there. I know that there's still talk about Zlatan Ibrahimovic coming to the LA Galaxy or LAFC. So that one still is cooking on the burners. We'll have to see where that one ends up. But what do you got for me, sir?
I have one that has been rumored for quite a long time, and I believe is a done deal, at least covering from here from my Paraguayan colleague, is that Derlei Gonzalez is off to MLS. He's going to join the Seattle Sounders after he plays his final game for Dynamo Kiev in the Champions League on Wednesday. But yeah, I think this has been a rumor that's been going on for a few months, actually, that I believe is a done deal now between Seattle and the team from Ukraine to get the Paraguayan player.
And for me, a great move for MLS. A fantastic young player. He adds a spark. I think he's going to do great things at Seattle. Going to get paired up with Lodeiro in that midfield. I mean, that is going to be some serious stuff there. And it's going to be fun to watch. Any other moves that you heard of besides that one?
Not at the moment. No, I mean, I guess we can mention the one for, I think we mentioned it on the show this week in football a few couple of days ago, was the one with Alvaro Morata. But yeah, I think not too much done deals happening so far this week. So yeah, we're just going to have to wait and see what happens at the end of the week.
The Alexi Sanchez rumors are still out there as well. So that stuff's still floating around. We'll have to see if there's anything that comes of that. There was rumors of him going to a couple of Italian clubs. Maybe we should have asked Zeke on that one as well. So let's
Sorry, Joe. Please. I just have one more, I guess. I don't think we've talked about this yet, but Kasky Honda is going to Mexico.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. We did not talk about that, and I did hear that. Go ahead and fill us in.
Yeah, obviously, Kasky Honda, who has been demonstrating too much for AC Milan, is up to Mexico, and he's going to join Pachuca.
That's a pretty good signing for them as well. They were one of the top teams in Liga MX last year, so that's going to be a good signing. You know, Inter Valencia went over to Tigres, so we're starting to see a little influx of quality players back into the North American continent here with players coming into MLS and players going into Liga MX. So we'll have to it'll definitely make both of those leagues exciting as well if we can see a lot of those moves finish off and we see a little bit more of a better distribution of players to teams over here in the North American continent. Let's look back at our match of the week and the week ahead, Rob. And obviously we're going to go heavy on the MLS side here as they're the only leagues that are playing right now. Last week we gave you two matches of the week. The first one was the NYCFC Toronto FC matchup that was played in New York on Wednesday night, I believe. I predicted a 1-1 victory in this one. I'm sorry, 1-1 draw in this one. Actually became a 2-2 draw. David Villa scoring in stoppage time in the 45th minute. And Maxi Morales in the 56th minute for the goals for NYCFC. Morgan in the 11th minute and Vasquez in a penalty in stoppage time in the second half to draw Toronto level. So as predicted, we had a 2-2 draw on that one. The second matchup last week that we gave as a match of the week was a double for NYCFC, not only facing the top team in Toronto on Wednesday, but actually second place team based on goal differential. They then turn around and face the top team in the Chicago Fire. This one I had predicted a 2-1 victory for Chicago. I didn't think NYCFC could handle both top sides and come away with points in both matches. But here, despite a Herrera red card 12 minutes into the match, goals by Villa and Brilliant offset the David Akam goal, and NYCFC managed to pull off a 2-1 victory in this particular matchup. So with that in mind, we're going to go take a quick peek at the standings because we had a multitude of games. I'll start in the Western Conference with FC Dallas currently leading the way on 34 points, Sporting Kansas City on 33, Houston Dynamo on 32, Timbers and Sounders on 30 points each. Last playoff spot occupied by the third Cascadia team, Vancouver Whitecaps, 26 points. San Jose Earthquakes are just outside the playoff zone on 27 points. San Jose is on 26 points. Real Salt Lake, who we're going to talk about in a minute, on 24 points. The LA Galaxy on 22 points, having lost five straight matches. Colorado Rapids on 20 points and Minnesota United on 19 points. The Eastern Conference, Toronto FC leading the way on 40 points. The Chicago Fire now solidly in second on 38. NYCFC on 37 points. Atlanta United on 33 points, the Red Bull on 32, Columbus Crew in the last playoff spot on 31 points. Orlando City just outside of them on 29 points, the Impact on 24, Philadelphia Union and New England Revolution on 23 points, and losers of five straight, DC United on 18 points currently in the season. That is all between 19 and 21 matches played. Top scorers so far in MLS, Nemanja Nikolic, with 16 goals, David Villa on 14, Kubo Torres on 12 goals, David Akam and Max Urruti round out the top five on 11 goals apiece. Let's give you the matches of the week real quick in MLS, and then we'll do some Gold Cup stuff as well. FC Dallas and Vancouver Whitecaps, that match is Saturday night at 8 p.m., a match up putting the top team in the Western Conference up against the last sixth place team in the playoff positions. This game is in Dallas. I'm going to take Dallas to win this particular one 2-0. The other match of the week is going to be Sunday with a rematch of this past week, the Toronto FC NYFC match being rematched on Sunday at 2 p.m. This one, though, is going to be at BMO Field. And I think on this one, I think Toronto gets a little redemption 2-1 here. With the victory, coming back from the draw that they suffered earlier in the week against NYCFC. So those are our two matches of the week. The last thing I do want to talk about in MLS in terms of teams is that the rant that Mike Petke went on the other night. I've got it queued up here, and hopefully you guys can hear it. I'm going to play it for you. It's 3 minutes long. It's his press conference. You know, in the end, he goes to point out the disparity between or the inconsistency in officiating we see in MLS. We were watching the Juventus-Barca game this weekend, and even fans there were talking about how the officiating in MLS has not been very good. So, Rob, you'll have to let me know quickly if you can't hear this, and then we'll just direct people to link the video. But here is Mike Petke's 3-minute rant on the poor officiating and why he got tossed after the Sporting KC match on the weekend.
Roland, you have your radio recording devices on? Get them on. All I'm going to say about what happened with me tonight, it's all I'm going to say about anything that happened yesterday with Kyle. So no questions about that. It's going to be met with after this, no comment, okay? Here's why I got ejected tonight, and it's on me. I apologize to my players already. I apologize to my boss, who's standing back there, Craig. I'm going to apologize to my owner, and I apologize to the fans right now, okay? But I could have released this, I could have went on Twitter, I could have done whatever. And here you go, Trey, hand him out. When Trey Kyle Beckerman gets fined in a run of play for literally extending his arm, yet the last game that Kansas City played, this pitcher, this happened with their number 6, Sanchez, who is a great player, valuable player for them, with his hand around the throat of a player from Philadelphia, with the referee looking straight there, look at his eyes, straight there, and then the whatever committee it is that can review this sees all this, nothing has happened. Kyle Beckerman is suspended for extending his arm while the player is coming away from our goal and Kyle's running towards our goal. No goal scoring threat. That's one. Why I got a red card tonight, or I don't think they do red cards for players.
I'm going to add that, but basically he goes on. He hands out photos from the from the matches and just absolutely loses his mind, you know, but in a passionate way. He even a few moments ago tweeted that it's been a pretty wild week for him, where I responded to him. But If you haven't seen it, go out and Google Mike Petke rant. You know, Salt Lake City. Rail Salt Lake actually tweeted a link to it, so it is out there for consumption. That's for sure, and definitely something you should definitely hear. The other thing I want to bring up, Rob, I want to make sure I still have you.
Yes.
Because I know the audio there was a little funky, and that was. As I alluded to in our monologue, when your money is no good here anymore. And that goes to the MLS, for lack of a better term, rejecting a $4 billion media rights deal. But there was one caveat to that deal. It had promotion relegation tied to it, which I think is what, you know, what caused, well, for one thing, might have caused MLS to say no. I know MLS came out and said that this was not going to be something that they could entertain because they're under contract at the moment with their current partners. But, Rob, the deal that was presented to them by the owner, I believe it was the owner of Miami FC, and I'm just looking for the information here quickly. It was MP and Silva. And the owner is of Miami FC, Ricardo Silva, who's the president of MP and Silva. The offer is for $4 billion. It was four times what MLS is getting right now for a TV deal, which even if it's thrown out there, it's not a negotiation or anything like that, but even if it's just thrown out there, hey, we're going to give you $4 billion, you know, but here's the deal. I mean, don't you have to stop and look at least listen, I mean, you're talking now a $4 billion deal. You're talking European television deal money. You're not talking, lower secondary league money. This is big boy dollars.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of money. But I think investing it, especially from the American Federation, will have to be very, very important on that part. And I think without the interest as well as the investments being made, that this money would end up going to waste. You know, I think we don't have too much, I guess, investment. You know, basically on a stadium and academia infrastructure. I mean, either NASL or USL or NPSL. I think everything will have to be relied on all the parts in American soccer.
Absolutely, and you know. I'd like to see now MLS pointed out in this article that I read from NBC Sports that they have I'm just going to take a look at it here. I'm trying to find the actual dating on the number. They basically said they couldn't negotiate anything until at least 2021. So my question is that that's 4 years away. But if this does come up again, do you think MLS listens?
It would have to be there would have to be a lot of details and a lot of things to be at play in this thing. I would say no. I would still say no.
Okay, I'm going to present one more monkey wrench here because I think this throws in a monkey wrench into the whole negotiation system. And that is, obviously, MLS charges, a ridiculous amount of money. They're charging up to $150 million in expansion fees to bring a team into the league, which franchises are lining up to do and are lining up to pay. Now, if, let's say they do bring up promotion relegation, right? Let's say that, there's the hint that a deal like this could actually have potential and MLS would consider signing it. Do you still buy in for $150 million knowing that you might get relegated?
I mean, unless you have the interest, yes. And you're willing to use that money to help you in the long term, I would say why not?
Yeah.
But it's a tough deal. It's a tough deal to reject that much money. But, I mean, I think what is being played here is the interest.
Yeah.
I think the interest is the most important thing out of any billion-dollar deal that you can have.
I agree 100%. So it'd be interesting to see what happens moving forward from this point on, though. Let's keep it on this side of the continent, Rob, and talk about the MLS Gold Cup, because obviously we're up to the finals now. And the way the Gold Cup tournament was set up, the way the draw was set up, the way everything was set up, this was gearing towards a USA versus Mexico match on Wednesday night in Santa Clara. Now, the United States held up their end of the bargain with a tough 2-0 victory over Costa Rica in their semifinal match. But Jamaica, not so much. With Jamaica, they end up, with Mexico. Mexico losing to Jamaica 1-0 last night on a very late goal by Lawrence, who I think is still on the Red Bull, knocking Mexico out of the Gold Cup. Now, I saw a couple of people say, oh, well, Mexico brought a B-side. And many of the other pundits were saying, well, Jamaica's got a little bit of a B-side here. They didn't really bring their strongest team to this competition either. And no one brought their strongest team, really, if you think about it from that standpoint, because the U.S. definitely didn't. I think Panama was missing a few players. Costa Rica definitely was missing a bunch of strong players that they're not using, or that they would have used in qualifying. So I'm going to ask you a couple of things here, Rob. One, looking forward to Jamaica, United States on Wednesday, which was a rematch of the semifinals from 2 years ago. What do you think was going to happen there? And two, should they go to a 4-year schedule on this particular tournament like they do with the Copa America, like they do with the Euros, especially when you see teams just bringing a B squad, a C squad, in a year where players are getting their rest before the World Cup?
Yes. On the second question, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, be on par with the rest of the world. Even be on par with, Africa needs to learn from that as well. And I think South America in recent years too. Yes, be on par with that. Be on par to do it every 4 years to not only have that the strongest team to qualify for the Confederations Cup, but to also rest up your players on off years, like this one, for example. You mean you want my opinion on this final, I guess?
Yeah, let's do that. Let's talk about the final for a second. You know, between USA and Jamaica, see, you know, what do you think of that?
Well, it's a tough game, I think, for both these teams. I think Jamaica has demonstrated it in all their games that they played. You know, they did help Mexico in the group stage beforehand, and they were able to get victories against Curaçao, El Salvador, then they beat Canada in that quarterfinal. So it's going to be a really tough test for Jamaica side, I think, is proving to the entire continent that, you know, the MLS players can definitely play with your Liga MXs and the rest of Central America and the Caribbean. But I think this is going to be a good game between two really strong teams. Jamaica did have the upper hand 2 years ago in that Gold Cup in Atlanta, so United States are definitely going for a revenge in this one. But I think the United States will learn from that, and I think we'll get their Gold Cup win in Santa Clara on Wednesday. So we're playing it on Wednesday. But yeah, I think they'll get the win here. I'm going to say 2-1 USA.
I was gonna add the same exact score, 2-1. USA only given up 3 goals in 5 matches so far. Jamaica has actually just been just as strong. They only gave up 1 goal in the group stages, and I believe only 1 goal in the playoff stages here. So, you know, definitely two solid defensive sides, but the USA added some important pieces when they went and kind of restructured the roster going into the knockout stages by adding players like Jozy Altidore, adding players like Clint Dempsey, who scored his 57th goal, if I remember correctly, to tie himself with Landon Donovan with the most goals scored all time for the U.S. men's national team. So they've had a lot of experience, a lot of quality to move forward, and I think 2-1 is definitely going to be a fair result and probably the final result in this particular matchup. And I'm in total agreement with you on that one. So Rob, I'm just looking over the schedule here quickly. We've talked about our transfers, our Gold Cup. We talked about MLS quite a bit tonight. We've added our matches of the week. I think we've got to go with a trivia answer, don't we?
Yes. Yes, we do.
All right.
So the question was again, Benjamin Mendy became the second most expensive player ever bought by Pep Guardiola as a manager. Can you name the other four? What team they came from and what team they joined?
Okay, so I have four names written down.
Okay.
The first one I think is easy because, like I had said, if Benjamin Mendy was number two at £52 million, he broke the transfer record for a defender, which was previously set by Pep Guardiola bringing in Kyle Walker from Tottenham Hotspur. So I think Kyle Walker will be my first answer.
He is, and he's fourth on that list.
Okay. I'm not sure. This guy then, just thinking of the numbers, this guy might be fifth. I'm pretty sure Pep brought him in when he was at Bayern Munich, came to them from Juventus, and it was Arturo Vidal?
No.
No. I can't remember how much the transfer fee was for Vidal.
$25.5 million.
Okay, so that's why he's not up on that list.
Which is a bargain, actually.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I just realized that right now.
Yeah, but he definitely came in under Pep. So now the other two names that I have written down, I think one of them is wrong.
Okay.
But it is the other parts of the MSN line at Barcelona. And I don't know if he brought both of them in or if he brought just one of them in. I'm going to say he brought in both. Okay. So, Luis Suarez from Liverpool to Barcelona.
Luis Suarez to Barcelona is incorrect because Luis Enrique was the coach during that time.
Was he the coach?
Pep was still at Bayern, yes.
Really? Correct. Oh, that must have been right after he left then.
No. Left in 2012. Suarez came in 2014, so you're off by 2 years.
Okay. So if that's the case, then Neymar would also be wrong.
Yes.
Yeah, so
he came in a year after.
Okay, so... So I've only got one right so far. I've got the Pep chance. Let me think here quickly.
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
All of them have played in the Prem, or at least they're going to play in the Premier League.
That's an interesting way to put it.
Have to or will are going to. Have to, oh, actually, I'll word it better. Have played, is playing, and will play. So past, present, and future.
Hmm. All right, we already talked about Walker and Mendy.
Some of them even happened in this transfer window.
Oh, I was going to say, what about Bernardo Silva?
Bernardo Silva's on that one. From Monaco. He's fifth.
Okay. How about Kevin De Bruyne? No, because he didn't bring him in. Sorry.
He didn't bring him in.
De Bruyne is wrong. All right, so Bernardo Silva, Kyle Walker.
Benjamin Mendy.
Benjamin Mendy, which was a given, so I'm missing two.
Two more.
I'm missing two players.
Both have played in the Premier League.
Both have played in the Premier League. Let me think about that real quick for a second. Both have played in the Premier League. Both have played in the Premier League. Oh, you got me now. Hold on. Let me think. Yeah, you've got me.
Nothing?
No, you've got me at this point.
All right, I'll give you some hints. Won multiple titles in different leagues.
Come on.
Bit on the old side.
Oh, wait. Yeah, no, did he? What about he brought in Claudio Bravo.
No, he did, but he's not on the list.
He's not expensive enough. Mm-hmm. So I think on the Bayern side.
Played for big clubs in all of Europe.
Okay, hold on. You didn't bring him in. And we're not talking about Douglas Costa.
No. Played in multiple. Yeah,
you've got me.
Leagues.
Go ahead and give it to me. I'm gonna kick myself when you say it.
Well, I'm gonna hold on to that one. I'm gonna try to get you this one. All right, this one's a young English defender.
Oh, John.
Probably gave it away.
No, because it wouldn't be John Stones. John Stones.
It is John Stones.
Pep brought in John Stones.
Pep brought in John Stones last season.
From Everton?
Yes, he did.
Okay. All right. So John Stones was that one. I'm going to kick myself because I know who you're talking about, because I remember having the conversation of players winning multiple titles in multiple leagues. I know we've had that chat with, like, N'Golo Kante. We've had that chat with a couple of other players. We even Zidane himself. but I just can't put my finger
Nothing?
On no, I can't put my finger on who it is.
All right. Played at Juventus, played at Inter, played at Milan, played at Barcelona, played at PSG, played at Manchester United. It's Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, number one.
He brought him into Barcelona. From Inter. Okay.
Yep. So the top five are as followed. Pep Guardiola brought in Zlatan Ibrahimovic from Inter to Barcelona for £57 million. He brought in Benjamin Mendy from Monaco to Manchester City for £52 million. He brought in John Stones from Everton for £47.5 million. He brought in Kyle Walker from Spurs for £45 million. And he brought in Bernardo Silva from Monaco for £43
million. See, I didn't think he brought Stones in. I thought Stones came in before. And I can't believe I missed Zlatan, but... I knew the Kyle Walker one was a layup. Wow. Okay. That was a great question, by the way. So, all right. So, with all that done, Rob, we've only got the closing music left on the list, right?
Yes, we do.
All right. Let's get that rolling here real quick here. Let's see if we can get it rolling. Of course, my computer picks the right time to act a little funny, right? So... For episode 170 of Low Limit Football, special thanks again to our guest Zeke Tell from Gianluca DiMarzio for joining us and breaking down the transfer league. Next week will be our last show before we go on a two-week break, where I'll be going over to the motherland and maybe taking some pictures in front of some famous stadiums in Italy. So, for episode 170 of Low Limit Football, I'm Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Ross.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.